a good clinical fellowship will allow you to hone your skills and be ready as a consultant in whichever, you know, facet of cardiology you want to work in.
Welcome to season two of the Super Podcast. In these conversations, we're bringing you even more insights from successful fellows and advice from leaders across the UK research landscape. I'm Nikhil Ahluwalia, and this is brought to you by the British Junior Cardiologist Association in partnership with the BHF CRC. Please check out our YouTube channel for extra content and the conversation videos. Just search for Super on YouTube. So today I'm pleased to be joined by Dr. Kalpa da Silva, who's a consultant interventional cardiologist at Guy's and St. Thomas's NHS Foundation Trust. He was awarded his PhD from King's College London for his research in coronary physiology in 2014. And before becoming a consultant, Dr. da Silva also completed an international fellowship in complex coronary intervention at the Royal North Shore Hospital in Sydney, Australia. We're pleased to have him here to joining us today and to discuss his experiences and share his advice. Now, Kalpa, what I really want to talk to you about is your thoughts on the relative values of your PhD and clinical fellowship. But before we jump into that, can you start by telling all the viewers what your background was and sort of your journey up to your PhD?
Yeah, thanks for the invitation to be here. So it's really great for me to join the podcast, and I've seen a few of the previous ones, so it's great that I can be of some help, hopefully. In regards to the journey to my PhD, it was a slightly different one to the conventional route, actually. So I was a trainee just prior to the way the current training schemes, or the prior to the shape of training schemes, was initiated. So I was able to do my PhD training after getting my number, but deferring the start of it. So I started as a SHO in general internal medicine and did that. Then I was able to get my number, but in that interim, I did a locum job at St. Thomas's as a registrar, which then allowed me to gain experience in the clinical sides of cardiology, but also allowed me to develop a link, really, a network with my then consultant colleague, supervisor, who became a PhD supervisor, and that was Professor Pereira. And so it was partly fortuitous that I was in an institution that I was able to develop a very good link, working link with someone, but also I had very similar interests in terms of coronary physiology. And I was, again, as I said, it was sort of serendipitous that I was in an institution that had a interest in coronary physiology. So I was then able to sort of show my interest and then, you know, go ahead and then apply for funding from research bodies. And I was ultimately awarded a clinical research fellowship from the Heart Research UK at the time, which then allowed me to actually then defer my entry to clinical training, do my PhD, and then re-enter back at that point as an ST4 in cardiology.
So you did your research really early on then.
I did.
And how did you find doing something that's pretty complicated and pretty hands-on in some ways at such an early stage?
Yeah, so I think there are pros and cons. So the obvious disadvantage of doing any research early on in your career as a registrar is you simply don't know as much as you would do if you'd done your research 3, 4, 5 years down the line. You're not exposed to as much clinical cardiology. You've not read around the subjects as much as you perhaps would have done if you were a more entrenched registrar. That being said, I think having done my research early, the major advantage I found was I was almost a blank canvas. I was able to sort of go into my research really full of enthusiasm. I wasn't burdened or tired by the service provision that was perhaps to come in my subsequent clinical years. And I was able to really go into research with a bit more perhaps verve than I may have done if I was 3 or 4 years down the line. You know, it's all speculative, but that's certainly my perspective. And, you know, I really enjoyed my research time. It allowed me to kind of improve my clinical skills in a way, because it was a translational clinical type project based in the cath lab, whilst also really learning around coronary physiology and taking a deep dive into coronary physiology. So I think it allowed me to have a good basis for my subsequent clinical training, as well as my ongoing research interests.
Great. So now I want to flip to your fellowship, really starting with the question of why. I mean, you were much later on in your training. What motivated you to seek that out and do that?
Yeah, so I think I mentioned earlier on about at the beginning of my registrar career, when I did my PhD, I wasn't burdened by the sort of service provision that we often are accustomed to in the NHS. I think by the time I did my fellowship, or by the time I decided I wanted to do a fellowship, I was very keen to have a break from, you know, the sort of rigmaroles of NHS working and a registrar at the time in that environment. There are many positives about working in NHS, but it is very draining. Being a cardiology trainee, as you know, is full on. And therefore, I wanted a change of scenery, and B, probably more importantly to me, was a change in perspective about, you know, learning about different healthcare systems, how different people operate, how different hospitals operate in a more broad sense. And I think we become a bit sort of entrenched in the way the NHS works. And I wanted to try and step back and see a different perspective, see healthcare from a different perspective. So that was one of the other things that drove me to want to go abroad.
And when did you start making foundations for that to happen?
So I was looking at different fellowships. There's a very sort of evolved fellowship program within interventional cardiology that's run by the British Interventional Society, Cardiac Intervention Society, that runs fellowships in Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. I was looking at these fellowships, and then independently to that, I was speaking with consultant supervisors who sort of mentioned different fellowship options. And the Royal North Shore one is a competitively interviewed fellowship, right, but is not part of the BSIS program. And I was actually being interviewed for the BSIS program, but then I was interviewed sort of almost parallel for the Sydney job. And I got that Sydney job and then elected to go with that post because I liked the idea of moving to Sydney. I thought the city would be a great place to live. I knew a little bit about the hospital there and the interventional department. There are colleagues that have worked there prior to me going. So there's been, you know, Colm Hanratty many years before me, James Coburn from Brighton, and Cal Azres, who was London trainee, is now living and working in Sydney. So there are a number of people I knew who have worked, and therefore that made me want to go to that particular institution.
Do you think it would have been a lot harder if you were applying to somewhere completely new that hadn't had experience taking fellows from the UK before?
Yeah, I think it's harder because it's that the infrastructure that you need, or the links you need between the host institution and the UK, if they aren't there or they don't exist, it will take a little bit more work to develop, but it's certainly not insurmountable. And I think the thing I would suggest is if there's something you want to do or the people watching want to do, there's such a swathe of opportunities. You should seek those opportunities. And if you find something that you like and there's a supervisor that is willing to accept you and is able to have you, then that's great. But the key thing is really about funding. I was funded by the local New South Wales government because they had provision for that, for me to do that. However, a lot of fellowships abroad don't have independent funding, and therefore you need to accrue some funding either through a grant here in the UK or a grant within the home country that you're applying to. The funding aspect is key. I mean, a lot of people have families and other financial commitments, so you need to think about how you can resolve that if you're thinking about an international fellowship.
And focusing on the clinical work that you did, how did that differ compared to if you'd, say, extended your training or done another year of clinical training in the UK?
I didn't know that until I went to Sydney. So it's really, some of it is on arrival, you get a feel for what's going to happen. But actually what transpired was it was an opportunity where I was almost removed virtually from all other commitments except being in the lab. Right. So I was able to spend 4 days of the five in the cath lab doing cases alongside the local trainees, or advanced trainees as they're called in Australia. And I then worked within a small group of advanced trainees and me doing a lot of the cases, meaning that you would do a huge volume, number one, which is not the be all and end all, but it's certainly an important metric from a confidence point of view, knowing the tools that you're using in the cath lab. Because you're soon to be an independent operator as a consultant. What you want is to to feel comfortable with the devices and technology that you're using and feel comfortable that you've had experience using them as a registrar, not using them for the first time as a consultant. So the Sydney experience allowed me to spend time, you know, honing skills, but also just spending time in the lab, just getting a feel for things, which was important. And it also was time that allowed me to be sort of purposeful in my practice of interventional cardiology. I was there doing what I wanted to do without distraction from a huge number of clinics or ward rounds or anything else like that, which I think still in the UK system, even as an advanced higher trainee, there is, unfortunately, by nature of the how the NHS works, there is commitments to do those things which take you away from some of the training aspects of your final year or two.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that for fellows who come from abroad to the UK. If they're funded, they get to focus on what they want to and increasing that confidence. So I guess playing devil's advocate, when you're abroad, you're almost out of sight, out of mind, really, for a lot of the centres in which you're potentially hoping to come back and work in as a consultant. Did you find it difficult to keep that network or to build that network from abroad?
Yeah, I mean, I think you naturally feel a little bit nervous about disappearing effectively for a year or more and not being in anyone's sort of direct vision. But I think the truth is, overall, the opportunity to do a fellowship, work with different types of colleagues in different environments, outweighs that risk. And I think there will always be opportunities in the UK when you return. And I think we have to sort of step back from, you know, ultimately it is a rat race, but we have to step back from that and think, what will make us better when we get back? What will perhaps be a little bit more, what will perhaps be different to what we can achieve and do in the UK and may enrich your working life a little bit differently to what we would do. So it may be that you are not in everyone's sort of immediate vicinity for a job, a consultant job, but it you add another string to your bow by doing a fellowship like this. So it's, you may lose a little in one way, but you're gaining a lot in another. So I don't think we should try and get away from the sort of end goal focus of getting a consultant job. You know, I've moved from one consultant post. There are loads of opportunities. There are many jobs around. Jobs always been created. I think we should think about, as individuals, what would be the right thing for you as an individual. And maybe not doing a fellowship, for example, or doing one, but what's right for you. And that should be the guide rather than that sort of end focus of the job that I want to get, which is of course important, but you should speak with your consultant supervisors and see whether it will be hugely detrimental and you may miss an opportunity. Of course you should do that and be open about it, but I don't think it should stop you from thinking about doing an international fellowship.
Okay. And so let's say that someone had the abilities to move abroad. What sort of person do you think would really benefit from doing that?
So I think from a experience point of view, it should be toward the end of your training. I think that's where you get the most out of the experience being abroad, because the centres you're going to are expecting someone who is sort of, it's sort of a finishing school. You go there to maximise time in the lab, refine your skills and spend a lot of time doing, you know, repetitive sort of procedural work. So definitely it should be toward the end of your training. In terms of personal attributes, I think it's about being open-minded and hardworking. I think they're the two things. You're going to a new environment, working different ways with different colleagues, and we will look at those environments and feel slightly uncomfortable because it's different from the way we've worked. But that is a learning experience. We're able to absorb things from those experiences that we will then be able to bring back and maybe add to our own home institutions when we return. So it's about being open-minded, but also working very hard, because I think ultimately the more you put in, the more you're going to get out of it.
If a trainee was torn between the idea of doing research, something like an MD or a PhD, or going abroad and doing a fellowship, do you have a thought process or a framework to try and help a trainee decide between those two if they couldn't do both?
Yeah, I think I mentioned not thinking about the end goal of a consultant job a minute ago, but actually when you're trying to decide about whether you can do one or the other or both, clearly doing both, there's advantages because you're getting, they're two very different experiences. Research training is about critical thinking, developing ideas, you know, having resilience to bring an idea into fruition, which is a very different type of experience when you're a clinical training fellow abroad or within the UK environment. I think if you need to decide which one you want to do or which one you could do because of time or financial limitations or pressures, my suggestion would be to think what type of job you want. So if you perhaps want to do more research type, if you want to be more research type driven consultant and work in a academic environment, I think a research degree is going to be the basis of that, the foundation of that, and is going to be critical to allow you to apply for jobs that will allow you to sort of further yourself from an academic point of view. Conversely, if you do not see yourself doing academic work in the longer term, a good clinical fellowship will allow you to hone your skills and be ready as a consultant in whichever, you know, facet of cardiology you want to work in. So I think it really depends on what type of consultant you see yourself and what type of institution you see yourself working in will then hopefully guide you in which direction of either a research degree or an international or national fellowship. But the other thing that I would say is important that perhaps I didn't do is ask colleagues that have done fellowships and research fellowships, but also ask your consultant body that you work with and you know well. You know, they've been through this, you know, they've made those decisions for themselves. And if you have a mentor that you feel you can speak to, I think that's a hugely valuable sort of person to try and engage with and get their advice about.
Yeah, great. That's some really good advice. Do you think that there's anything, if you could go back, is there anything that you wish you could change?
So I mentioned at the beginning, there are steps in your career within your registrar training and then becoming a consultant. They're all demanding in different ways. And I think the one thing I would say to myself was try and enjoy the experience as much as possible, which sounds, you know, a little bit obvious and sounds sometimes difficult because we work in sometimes challenging environments. But actually, as the years go on, you realise some of the most fun years are your registrar training years. You're often working in a very team-based environment with registrar colleagues who are suffering the same things you are suffering. And I think enjoying it is probably the most important thing, I would say.
That's a great message to leave everyone on. So, Dr. De Silva, once again, thanks so much for giving up your time and sharing all that advice.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Join us next time on the podcast for...
I look for hunger. You know, how hungry is this individual for success? And how ambitious is this individual?
I'm joined by Professor Sanjay Sharma, who's Professor of Sports Cardiology and Inherited Cardiac Diseases at St George's University of London. In the first of this two-part series, he talks about the prestigious sports cardiology academic group that he leads and what his expectations are in terms of output from his research fellows.